I want our payers to reimburse for these treatments. That's where the attention should be given. We have good devices. We have good data. We need people who want these devices to insist that they be reimbursed for them. They're less expensive for the most part, long term, than a lot of the migraine specific medications. They don't have the side effects. And I think it's access.
Neuromodulation represents a key area of progress in migraine care, offering effective drug-free options for both treating and preventing attacks. But with a growing number of devices, with unique mechanisms and evidence bases, how do we make the best choices about whether to incorporate these into our treatment plans and which to use? Here to guide us is Dr. Stuart Tepper, a leading headache specialist who's been at the forefront of neuromodulation research, leading pivotal clinical trials and publishing key analyses that have shaped the field. With him, we'll compare the available devices, dive into the science behind the research, and discuss the practical realities of using these technologies to manage migraine. Dr. Tepper, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to start by discussing external neuromodulation, devices people can utilize outside of their bodies. For a patient who is new to this concept of neuromodulation, what is it, and how would you broadly categorize available options?
We'll start, as you said, with non-invasive neuromodulation, because it's not clear that the implantable devices work yet. And we, in headache medicine, are not recommending them yet prior to studies. The non-invasive neuromodulation devices are portable, and patients put them on their head or their arm or hold them in place. And when activated, they modulate, they change brain function and can stop migraine in progress or prevent migraine. Almost all of them, all of these devices have a US FDA designation as non-significant risk, meaning that they really don't carry any significant side effects. And as you said, these offer the opportunity to treat migraine without medication. One way to think about them is that when we give medications, we are generally aiming at specific chemical targets that we know about, such as calcitonin gene-related peptide or CGRP, the big one currently. When we use non-invasive neuromodulation, we are affecting the brain as a whole or specific pathways in the brain. And we may be aiming at targets that we know about, but also targets that we don't know about. And that offers hope for people for whom multiple medications have not worked or who want to avoid medication in general. Thus, the opportunity for people with non-invasive neuromodulation is really quite high. And where it fits into practice is not completely worked out. But in my practice, I integrate these devices pretty routinely.
That is fascinating. So you're talking about an option that instead of acting as medications do neurochemically, they act on the brain as a whole, addressing pathways and parts of those pathways that we're familiar with, and maybe parts of those pathways that are relevant that we don't yet know, but are still being acted upon by the device.
That's correct.
So we can think about the available devices as those that could act preventively, acutely, and then some that can act both preventively and acutely. Is that correct?
Well, actually, I think that all six FDA cleared devices in the U.S. work both acutely and preventively. Some of them have only an FDA clearance for acute treatment, some only for preventive treatment, but I believe they all work both ways. And you can see how, as people use these devices acutely over time, frequency of headache goes down. They don't cause overuse headache. They don't cause rebound. They don't increase the frequency of attacks. There's no limit on the number of times they can be used in a day or across time.
Okay, so let's talk about the 6 neuromodulation devices that are currently available.
I have bad news. Almost none of them is covered by insurance. Period, the end. There are a few exceptions. One is in the Veterans Administration. The VA covers all of them. And the VA has been at the forefront of access. But I always warn people, access is going to be a significant issue. Cost will be the next issue. Now what we can do is then go on to the 6 devices, and I can cover them as we proceed through them. The first device that was approved, that was cleared by the FDA, these devices are not technically approved. They're cleared by a different section of the FDA than does medications, was the external trigeminal nerve stimulator, Cefaly. Cefaly is one of 2 that is available without a prescription. So people can go online and simply order it. There's a lot of teaching that I do with people to explain how to use Cefaly, because if they try it without proper training, they probably won't tolerate it. But Cefaly is a device that goes on the forehead as a sticky pad, and then it's turned on, and it is turned on either, as we talked about, for the acute as needed treatment of a migraine, which in which it turns on for 45 minutes and buzzes the forehead and stimulates nerves in the forehead, and it turns on for an hour in that setting for acute treatment, although one large study suggested that 2 hours works better than 1 hour. 2 hours of acute treatment is more likely to result in pain freedom than 1 hour. The other treatment turns it on for 20 minutes to prevent migraine. And that's done every night, 20 minutes. And the FDA has cleared it in adults for the acute treatment of migraine and the preventive treatment of migraine. The device is rechargeable, and it costs, depending on which month you look online, about $400 for the device. How do these trigeminal stimulators work? Well, there are 2 ways that I think of that they work. One is there are nerves in the forehead that are part of the trigeminal nerve. The trigeminal nerve serves pain in the front of the head. And what the trigeminal stimulators or neuromodulation devices do is they send an inhibitory signal to the lower brainstem to try to turn off the migraine that way. And people will feel the stimulation on these nerves going up the forehead. But it's also been shown that these devices affect the brain functioning that has to do with pain in the what's called the pain matrix. And there are what are called functional imaging studies that show that with repetitive use of this device, the pain matrix starts to turn down. Therefore, I think these devices have both an acute effect on the pain pathways that integrate migraine and a long-term effect on kind of reducing brain activity that is associated with pain. That's how I think the 2 external trigeminal neurostimulators work.
So is that essentially a reduction of sensitization of the brain through that pathway?
The second part, where it affects the pain matrix, it probably is that. The first part is more direct. Interestingly, the FDA designates these devices as TENS units. I'm not convinced that's an adequate evaluation of their upside. Because a TENS unit, the minute you take it off, it stops working. And that's not true here, because if a person puts it on for an hour or 2 hours to stop a migraine and the migraine stops, that's not really like a TENS. A TENS, the minute you take it off, it stops working. So, and also the long-term cortical and pain matrix effects are I don't think are consistent with the idea that these are TENS units. But for whatever reason, the government has classified them as TENS units. Many, many people cannot tolerate how intense it feels as it escalates. Now, one can teach people how to get around that by having them escalate, let it accelerate for 5 minutes and then press a button and let it sit there and do 5 minutes of acceleration a week and then 10 minutes for a week and then 15 minutes for a week. And then finally, after a month, they can get to the full stimulation.
Great. So moving on to the second device, Dr. Tepper.
Very similar to the first device, a knockoff. The second device is also goes on the forehead, and it's called Hediturn. It can be used acutely and preventively. The preventive dosage, again, similar to Cefaly, is 20 minutes daily. The acute treatment is not FDA cleared, but actually the only study ever done on this device was for acute treatment, and it was for 20 minutes of acute treatment. Rather than an hour or 2 hours, but it can be returned on again. And unlike Cefaly, which gradually increases across the 20 minutes of prevention, Hediturn has 5 settings, and people can set how intense the stimulation is and gradually work up by simply setting it at a higher and higher level. Again, Hediturn is does not require a prescription, so that people can simply go online and order it. Again, there is a Hediturn rechargeable device, and the advantage of Hediturn is it's less expensive. It's $109 for the rechargeable device instead of $400. It's $24 for the 3 sticky electrodes instead of $25. So it has that advantage. It doesn't have technically the FDA clearance for both acute and prevention. And for acute treatment, people keep having to turn it on because it only stays on for 20 minutes at a time. But it should work the same way as Cefaly.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass.
Now, the third device, Dr. Tepper.
Third device, in terms of the order in which they were approved, is the single pulse transcranial magnetic stimulator, which is called STMS. The brand name is Savvy Dual. And this is a device that is about shoebox size, and it's plugged in, and you turn it on and it boots, and then put it on the back of the head and press a button, and it pulses a magnet that fast. Boom. And then you have to reboot it to pulse it again. And what this device does is send a magnetic pulse forward in the brain, about halfway forward, and the pulse does not go below the chin. And the initial FDA clearance was for acute treatment, that is as needed treatment. Initially, it was for 3 pulses. Now people tend to use 4 pulses for acute treatment. And then there was a study that suggested that it worked preventively with 4 pulses applied in the morning and 4 pulses applied at night over 3 months took to see the prevention. And the FDA cleared it for both acute and preventive treatment. There is not a maximal number of pulses per day for the STMS device. The STMS device is approved not only for adults for acute and preventive treatment, but down to age 12 for adolescents. So it has an adolescent indication. It's the first of them that obtained that. And I was on some of these studies. I think it works quite well. How it works is that there are two ways that it probably works. One is that when people get migraine aura, and about a quarter of people get migraine aura, that the magnet can actually stop the wave of the migraine aura at the beginning of the aura. For people without aura or for the prevention, the switching site for pain in the brain coming up from the bottom of the brain and going up into the pain matrix and the cortex is the thalamus. Thalamus is like your switching station for railroad tracks. And the magnetic pulse probably inhibits the thalamus. It turns off the ability of the thalamus to send the signal upstairs. The biggest problem with the STMS device is that it's very expensive. Very, very expensive. People have to pay $1,050 for the first 3 months, no money back guarantee. And then after that, it's $350 a month to rent. And it's not, you can't own it. And you have to get the SIM card recharged in order for it to go forward. So that is a problem with it. Now, one advantage of STMS is that in the UK, the National Health Service actually cleared it for use during pregnancy. And the reason for that is that the pulse of the magnet, as I said, goes halfway forward and no lower than the chin. And so it's not felt to do anything deleterious to a developing fetus. The U.S. has not weighed in on whether it's safe for use in pregnancy. But for those that can afford it, it would be, I think, an option during pregnancy. The next device is the non-invasive vagal nerve stimulator, NVNS, which is, the brand name is called GammaCore Sapphire, but there's an additional piece of information about it, which I will let you know about at the end. And this is a device, it's like an old Norelco razor, and goop is applied to it, and then it's put on the neck, and it is activated for 2 minutes. And when it's activated, the side of the lip twitches. Some people get sore throat or something in the throat when it's activated. And it is FDA cleared for acute treatment of migraine, preventive treatment of migraine, and acute treatment of episodic cluster headache attacks. And on top of cluster treatment for prevention of cluster headache attacks. And it's also approved for two of the more rare forms of headache that are called trigeminal autonomic cephalalgias, hemicrania continua and paroxysmal hemicrania. And there are different numbers of times that the 2 minute stimulations have to be applied, either three times a day or twice a day or as needed. So it is variable depending on which kind of headache you're trying to treat and whether you're going to use it acutely or preventively or both. But it is flexible in terms of giving people the opportunity to treat all of these different kinds of headache disorders. In fact, there was a paper that was published within the last couple of months by Dr. Goadsby that evaluated its effectiveness in a large number of people with those rare kinds of headache disorders. And it really seemed to work both acutely and preventively in a large number of people with all of the trigeminal autonomic cephalalgias. So that was encouraging. The disadvantage of GammaCore, again, is that, and by the way, all of them except Cephaly and Hediterm require prescriptions. And the prescriptions always have to be sent into different places. So that's another obstacle in care. But the non-invasive vagal nerve stimulator, the GammaCore device, is $450 to try it for the first 3 months. Then it's $600 per 3 months. And that's $200 a month, every month, to use it. And it has to be recharged via the SIM card or some other thing that they do. So that really makes it not very attractive for most people outside the VA. But the same company makes another device that does exactly the same things called Truvaga Plus. And Truvaga Plus is not FDA cleared for all of the headache disorders. It's cleared for rather non-specific indications I think sleep and feeling wellness and things of that sort. And it turns out stress release, sleep, and mental clarity are the clearance for the Truvaga device. But it's rechargeable. And it does exactly the same thing. And it delivers 2 minutes of stimulation. It's made by the same company. And it costs $500 one time. And then you do have to pay for the, or you have to access the goop to put it on the neck. But there, to me, as a clinician, there's no reason for people outside the VA to ever be prescribed gammaCore. They can be prescribed Truvaga Plus. If they can afford the $500 one time, they can use it for all of these different kinds of headache disorders, which is very good news. And that increases the potential use of non-invasive vagal nerve stimulation. The next device is the remote electrical neuromodulation device, or Nerivio. And this device is a sticky pad that goes on the arm that you turn on, and it has a little band that keeps it on the arm. You can put it underneath the shirt, and it requires a smartphone app, and the app turns on the device, and it vibrates the arm. And initially, people are instructed to increase the intensity of the vibration until it hurts, and then pull it down so it's a strong vibration, but it should not hurt. And when it's turned on, it turns on for 45 minutes and then turns off automatically. And it is cleared for the acute treatment of migraine and every other day for the preventive treatment of migraine, 45 minutes every other day, all the way down to age 8. So it is not just adolescent and adult, but pediatric dosing as well. Looks like it actually works acutely and preventively in kids. And again, a non-significant risk device. It doesn't have significant side effects. It works by a reflex called the condition pain modulation, in which pain in location A inhibits pain in location B. And what the device does is to fool the brain into thinking that it's receiving a pain signal from the arm, but it's not, because the person took it down so it doesn't hurt. And that signal goes up into the brain and through a reflex turns off the migraine. In the U.S., it costs $50 for the first device. Each device has enough juice in it to treat 18 times. Then it has to be thrown out. It's not rechargeable. So people turn it on for 45 minutes every other day for prevention. That's 15 doses in a month. And there's a few extra for as-needed treatment. And after the first device, it costs $200 for three devices, so $67 per device thereafter. So that is the remote electrical neuromodulation device. I use it a lot because for kids and adolescents, they don't want to take drugs. Their parents don't want them to take drugs, and it actually works. And the cost is affordable for most people. The last device that's FDA cleared is a combined occipital trigeminal neurostimulator called Relivion. And this device takes the cephaly and hepatoterm workings in the front and adds a stimulator or neuromodulation device in the back. And it sits in a lightweight device that is circumferential around the head. And very lightweight. And when they developed it, they specifically wanted it not to hurt. So they wanted it to work like cephaly, but not hurt in the front. Most people say they don't have any side effects with it at all. It's FDA cleared for prevention, and people turn it on for 45 to 60 minutes preventively. But there are some descriptions of it working preventively when used 20 minutes daily, 5 to 7 days per week. So the duration of the stimulation can be set by a person and they can use it preventively, even though it doesn't have FDA clearance. Again, I think that's a difference without a distinction. And I think it can be used both ways. And the difference between this device and cephaly, besides that it doesn't hurt, is that there are two ways to get into the bottom of the brain to turn off migraine. The trigeminal system, which is in the front, that cephaly and head of term work on, and the occipital nerves in the back, where people will sometimes get nerve blocks. And that system comes up from the spinal cord and then goes into the same area as the front. And the idea for the Relivion device is that it includes the front and the back. And the big problem with Relivion is cost again. It's $150 for the first 2 months, but then people have to buy it. And the cost is $650. And so a lot of people don't want to do that. But it is well-tolerated and effective, and I think effective both acutely and preventively.
Are there any people who should not use any of these options for safety reasons?
So I avoid the vagal nerve stimulator in people with coronary disease and vascular disease and arrhythmias. People with indwelling devices, the magnet probably should not be used. Those with implants in the head, plates in the head, some of these devices have to be careful. But for the most part, they're extremely safe and can be broadly prescribed.
So when do you think of neuromodulation for a patient living with migraine?
So at one end, people with intermittent attacks that are young, those who have a poor tolerability or have contraindications to medicines, and there's a lot of people that can't take one medicine or another for those reasons, on top of medicines, so as an adjunct to existing treatment, those planning pregnancy or pregnant, and at the other end, people who have chronic migraine for whom multiple medicines have failed, either because of a lack of effectiveness or side effects, or an older patient who's taking multiple medicines that has that have high potential for drug-drug interactions. And here you can add treatment that is not going to cause drug-drug interactions. At the far end in the chronic migraine people, they will think that all the other options are close to exhausted, and yet I've seen them respond to non-invasive neuromodulation. So you can see it's a very wide net for whom these therapies are useful.
Do you ever recommend that those living with migraine consider them as a bridge approach during a wearing off period, maybe for a medication they use that's dosed quarterly or transitioning off preventives, perhaps?
Not usually, because it takes too long for them to kick in. I mean, they could use them acutely for attacks that break through during the wearing off, but they won't work preventively unless they're used repeatedly over periods of time.
If one neuromodulator doesn't work for someone and access isn't a barrier, is it worth them trying a different one?
I think absolutely. The ones that are similar are cephaly and head of term. So if one didn't work, probably the other wouldn't work. But I've seen patients who didn't respond to cephaly who responded to Relivion, because Relivion has both the front and the back. And then the vagal nerve stimulator, the magnet, and the Revio device, those work by completely different mechanisms. And yes, I think it doesn't matter what the previous lack of response was. It's worth trying a different one if access can be afforded.
So as with medications, if one doesn't work, trying a different medication with a different mechanism of action here, if that applies as well.
Yes.
So looking ahead, Dr. Tepper, what are the most important next steps in neuromodulation research? What type of advancements do you hope to see in 5 years?
I want our payers to reimburse for these treatments. That's where the attention should be given. We have good devices. We have good data. We need people who want these devices to insist that they be reimbursed for them. They're less expensive for the most part long-term than a lot of the migraine-specific medications. They don't have the side effects. And I think it's access.
How can people living with migraine advocate for improved access, practically speaking?
Good question. I mean, I've watched this over decades now. I think you have to work through patient advocacy groups such as the American Migraine Foundation, the National Headache Foundation, CHAMP. There are a number of patient advocacy groups, and they can steer you to people who would be interested in advocacy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tepper, for joining us yet again on the Migraine World Summit.
Have a great day. Thank you.